last week, another perennial event that talks about perennials, the Wild World of Weeds workshop took place, and it was the first ever for the guy who was pretty much in charge of it. He's brand new to North Dakota. He is the NDSU Extension Weed Control Specialist, Joe Eichley. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Mick. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks. Welcome to Farm Talk. Thank you very much for... how does a guy from Maryland end up in North Dakota?
Well, you know, just kind of started moving west. Ended up going from Maryland to Purdue to get my PhD down in Indiana. And then when I was finishing things up, this job opening came up, and I said, that looks like a pretty good job.
So you began your job on New Year's here in North Dakota, and wouldn't you know it, this is going to be the coldest cold snap we've had in years. So welcome to North Dakota.
Yeah, thank you. People kind of told me get through your first winter and then things will be fine. So I said, well, heck, let's just go and right in the heart of winter. So, yeah, got up here December 29th and started work on the 31st.
All right. Well, baptism by fire or by deep freeze in this case, I guess. So, well, your takeaway from the Wild World of Weeds workshop, what were your thoughts last week?
Yeah, that was a good workshop, so I'm glad that we kept it going. Have to praise my technician, Devin Worth, and then also Dr. Tom Peters for pulling it together and making it work. And it was a great event, good attendance, even though we had some not ideal weather conditions. Just a good way to highlight some of the research that's ongoing at North Dakota State.
Sure. In the, I guess, the invasive weed department, Palmer amaranth sure is at the top of the list, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, we found Palmer in North Dakota last summer, the first time that we found it in the state, and everyone has moved quickly to get information out on this weed and is now actually on the noxious weed list heading into 2019. And so with my prior experience at Purdue, I have about 6 years of experience with Palmer amaranth, and I was asked to talk about Palmer during my talk at the Wild World of Weeds.
So what is most important? I know identification has been the top of the list for a lot, but now we move into control. So is still ID top of the list of most important things to know?
Yes. Yeah, I would say that proper identification is the top of the list for controlling Palmer. And I'll throw water hemp in that same group. Oftentimes when we get the phone calls of, I've got this weed I can't control, it's 2 or 3 years of improper ID, it was a pigweed out there, it didn't control it, and now all of a sudden it's everywhere. The primary battle is proper identification, and then we get into management options once we know that we have it.
So what can it be confused with?
It's most often confused with just our other pigweeds, so red root pigweed, smooth pigweed, and Powell amaranth, not Palmer, but Powell amaranth. We've had those for as long as any one of us can remember, and they have their own challenges, but they can't get out of control like things like water hemp and Palmer can, at least not what we've seen historically. So it's usually just, we think it's one of the other pigweeds we've dealt with forever, and then sometimes it ends up being Palmer or water hemp.
So other than control issues, what are some of the other big dangers at misidentifying Palmer amaranth?
Well, the issue with misidentifying something like Palmer is that it grows very quickly under ideal conditions. So Palmer can grow 1 to 3 inches a day if it has the right heat and enough moisture. And so when we talk about controlling Palmer or really any weed, it's all about the size. And so something like Palmer or water hemp, if we misidentify it at 2 or 3 inches tall, come back 3, 4, 5 days later, it might be 8 to 10 inches tall. And so that's one of the other issues of, controlling a weed like that, is that when it gets ahead of us, our herbicide options become very limited.
The germination of Palmer seed, does that happen? Is this like water hemp, you'll get a flush after every rain or later in the season? When are we most likely going to see flushes of growth of Palmer?
So what we've seen with Palmer is basically anytime we get a rain event, we'll get a new flush. Typical start for germination in northern Indiana, which is where my experience was, is about May 15th. So I would expect maybe the end of May up here in North Dakota. And then basically every time it gets a rain through September, if we don't have a crop canopy, I would expect some germination to occur.
So during the course of, I guess, until about mid-July when we get corn and get that canopy in both corn and beans, should we be out there scouting the fields?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, one of my messages is that if you had some pigweed to get away from you last year, be extra vigilant for scouting. And that's where the proper ID comes into place. But the good news is Palmer's weak link is a crop canopy. So if we get to about 90% canopy closure, germination will stop. So it's really using herbicides to control Palmer until we get to that 90% crop canopy, which, of course, will occur quicker in something like wheat rather than corn or soybean.
Right. So once we start dealing with Palmer, again, very important to control it when it's short. Is there a certain height of Palmer amaranth that it's just too late?
Yeah, so once we get to about 6 inches, I wouldn't expect much in the way of control with herbicides. And this is why it's very problematic. You know, most labels are catching on, and most herbicide labels are being rewritten to 3 to 4 inches. And that is almost ideal for something like Palmer or water hemp. Really, I want to see control at 2 inches. Once we get to 3 to 4 inches, we'll still get good control, but with the rapid growth, we can quickly lose that battle if we get much taller than 4 inches.
Okay, and what herbicides are favored for controlling Palmer?
So in corn, we have plenty of options still, and that's a good thing. Atrazine and our group 27, or the bleacher herbicides, are still very effective on most populations. It's in soybeans and other crops where it becomes more limited. So in soybeans, we really want to do something, a good pre-emergence program. The Valor or Flumioxazin products, Authority, which is a sulfentrazone, or Spartan is the other trade name, is a good base to put down, one of those group 14 herbicides, plus a group 15. Zidua tends to be the best on Palmer, but things like Dual Outlook, they tend to do a pretty good job as well. And then cut back with something post. We don't think we have group 14 resistance up here yet. So something like Flexstar, Cobra, or Blazer would work post-emergence in any traded soybean crop. Otherwise, we're turning towards something like Liberty and Liberty Link, Extend Technologies, or the Enlist technology.
Okay. All righty. Well, we had a couple of weeds go on the noxious weed list, and Hound's Tongue is one of them. That's kind of, although it's been around here, I think, for, 90 years, having to deal with that, what's the best herbicide for Hound's Tongue?
Yeah, so Hound's Tongue is one of those where it's been very problematic in pockets of the state, and there's been townships that have basically treated it as a noxious weed until this year where it's noxious statewide. So for Hound's Tongue, it is a biennial. So if we properly identify it in the first year, that's the best year for control. And Dr. Rod Lim, who's recently retired, did some pretty nice work and has a short two-page publication on Hound's Tongue. And things like 2,4-D, if we find it in that first year, and say small rosette is a pretty good herbicide. And metsulfuron is the other one that comes to top of mind for Hound's Tongue control. Now, being a biennial, if we find it that second year, that's when it quickly bolts, gets to be 2 or 3 feet tall. Much more difficult to control in that second year of growth, easier in the first year.
All righty. Okay, well, and then we've got the old standby leafy spurge. I would assume it's going to be another issue across North Dakota. What's your thoughts on leafy spurge, Joe?
Yeah, so leafy spurge has been a problem for a while, and if you didn't make it to the wild world of weeds, you missed a very good story that Dr. Rod Lim told. So since he just retired after, I believe it's 39 years of service, he told his story about leafy spurge control in North Dakota, and it's basically what he made his career on. And with leafy spurge, it's one of these things where we use every tool that we can. So there's some pretty good biologicals out there, some insect populations that are across the state. And we can use those. I believe pathogens were not very good for leafy spurge control, at least what was tested. But it's really using those beneficials to keep the populations down and staying ahead of the game. We have seen a couple locations where leafy spurge might be trying to make a comeback, so it's still proper ID, using control measures when we can to stay ahead of the game on leafy spurge.
Gotcha. All righty. Joe Eichle, North Dakota State University Extension Weed Control Specialist. And if folks are going to be going to a weed meeting this winter and early spring, I'm sure they're going to see you. So we'll look forward to sharing your expertise both on the radio and at these upcoming extension meetings. So, hey, Joe, thanks for being on the radio.
Yeah, thank you, Mick. I'm excited to be here.
And, well, yeah, like I said, welcome to the Dakotas. We've given you a warm welcome this week. So,
yeah, if the forecast holds, it looks like it would be 120 degrees colder than the day I interviewed.
Okay. All
righty. Good Dakota welcome there.
Right on. All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon, Joe. This is Farm Talk.